From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont. This is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, Kim McQueen is coming in to do a live interview with the author Hannah Howard, who has a new memoir out, Feast, True Love in and Out of the Kitchen, published by Little A. Hannah Howard is a writer and food expert who spent her formative years in New York eating, drinking, serving, bartending, cooking on a hotline, and flipping giant wheels of cheese in Manhattan's landmarks, such as Picoline and Fairway Market. She received her BA from Columbia University in creative writing and anthropology. She is currently pursuing her MFA in creative nonfiction at the Bennington Writing Seminars, where she is the recipient of the Lucy Grayley Scholarship. Her work has been published in New York Magazine, Vice, and Self. She also mentors women recovering from eating disorders by helping them build happy, healthy relationships with food and themselves. She lives in New York City. Hannah Howard is a Columbia University freshman when she lands a hostess job at Picoline, a Michelin-starred restaurant in Manhattan. 18 years old and eager to learn, she's invigorated by the manic energy and knife-sharp focus of the crew. By day, Hannah explores the Columbia art scene, struggling to find her place, and by night, she's intoxicated by boxes of heady truffles and intrigued by food industry insiders. She's hungry for knowledge, success, and love, but she's also ravenous because she hasn't eaten more than yogurt and coffee in days. Hannah is hiding an eating disorder. The excruciatingly late nights, demanding chefs, bad boyfriends, and destructive obsessions have left a void inside her that she can't fill. To reconcile her relationships with the food she worships and a body she struggles to accept, Hannah's going to have to learn to nourish her soul. Her book, Feast, was published by Little A in April, and Kim McQueen is about to speak to her. I want to tell you a little bit about Kim. Kim has been a guest interviewer on Write the Book before. She is also the faculty advisor to students in the professional writing, creative media, communications, and film programs at Champlain College. She is managing editor for the Champlain College Publishing Initiative. She serves as an adjunct instructor in the professional writing program. And I am now going to turn the show over to Kim and Hannah. I hope that you enjoy their conversation.
Hannah, how are you?
Hi, Kim. I'm good. How are you?
So we're back to talking about Feast, True Love in and Out of the Kitchen. I wanted to start with maybe asking you to read a couple of pages from the first part of the book because I really love how you describe what having an eating disorder actually feels like. And I thought that you did that really, really well. And that's a great place to start. And why don't we take it away? Top of page 3, Hannah Howard.
Hi. So I'm going to read exactly where you just told me to, but just to give you a little bit of background about where we are in the book. I decided to start with sort of my last epic binge, and I am at my parents' friend's house on the Upper East Side. I have just moved home to New York City from Philadelphia, and things are good in my life, which was one of the reasons I found this eating disorder kind of mysterious. So without further ado, the friends are named Joy and Alec. Well, Joy gestures to the spread of sushi and slivers of sashimi, gyoza and edamame, little bowls of ginger and wasabi. The feast covers the entire table. Don't be shy. My dad fills his plate first. My mom pulls a soybean from its green shell with her teeth. At first, I partake like a normal human being, dip a salmon avocado roll in soy sauce, add a dab of wasabi, and then another and another. Everyone is eating, a pause in the conversation. Then there's a shift. Something is awakened in me, a hunger that feels like a foreign malicious force curled up in my stomach and reaching its monster limbs into my mouth and through my hands. I can't stop eating. My mom gives me a sideways glare. I know that look. the same one from when I was a kid. It means you are eating a lot and I am noticing and it is not okay. It means you are not a skinny girl and you are not okay. The only thing worse is when she actually says out loud, you know, dinner is coming, or save some for everyone else, or don't you think you've had enough to eat, maybe? I wait for my mom to say one of those things or something worse, but she turns to Joy. How is your aunt? Oh, I'm forgetting her name. June is healthy as a horse with killer lipstick. We just celebrated her 94th birthday. Mom turns away from Joy to give me the look again. I see what I usually see in her eyes, embarrassment, judgment. And past all that, I see something new. Compassion? I am practically snuggled up with Mom and Dad on Alec and Joy's sofa, but the conversation feels far away. I can't stop hand to mouth, no matter how much I will myself and no matter how much I hate myself for my lack of self-control, my irrepressible gluttony. I hate the bulk of my body, and I hate that I am failing to shrink it. I watch the way my thighs swish and unfurl onto the sofa. Somehow, I manage to stop eating sushi before the entire tray is consumed. Joy and Alec's fluffy dog curls up in my lap. Its little head rests soft on my knee. So tell us about Fairway. Do you know the secret of the smoked salmon yet? Joy asks. Fairway is where my new job is. I only know the secrets of the cheese. I'm starting behind the cheese counter. It's a temporary situation until they figure out a job in the office for me. But the cheese is right next to the deli counter where we have all the locks and the geniuses who slice it. Joy and Alec's kindness feels as soft as the pup, and I find it touching that they want to know about the minutiae of my life. I tell them about the light in the morning in my new apartment, Central Park out the window. I tell them about Fairway, the way I spent my first day breaking down a wheel of Parmigiano Reggiano, how we use the rinds to flavor soup. When dessert is served, a giant plate of cookies set right in front of me. They're from the deli next door, but I think they're the most outrageous cookies in New York, Alec says, proud of his cookies. We're not really sweets people, my dad chimes in. He must be using the royal we. His cookies are my favorite. We really shouldn't be eating these either, Joy says. My mom looks at me again. I don't meet her eyes. There are five of us at the table and probably enough cookies for a party of 20 or even more. Chocolate chip, oatmeal raisin, butterscotch, peanut butter. The cookies are fat, round, as big as my face. Everything else fades out of focus. All I see are cookies. I am Odysseus, and the cookies are sugar sirens. My parents and their friends fade to a fuzzy scrim. I start with a little wedge each of oatmeal, raisin, and chocolate chip. That seems a reasonable way to start. But it also seems reasonable that I should try the other varieties because they indeed turn out to be exemplary cookies, sweet but not too sweet, crunchy but with give, buttery and dense. The cookie sends a rush, electric almost, from my mouth to my brain. The other cookies, from which I snap off pieces to chew on slowly, are excellent too. And by this point, I haven't eaten the whole cookie, just pieces, which doesn't feel like enough, really. So I eat some more pieces, and then some more. It's a crime to leave a piece of cookie broken, naked like that, prone on the platter. It's my duty to eat it. The rush vibrates and surges to my stomach, my temples. My fat thighs disappear from underneath me. I feel the sugar and the butter surge to my toes as if I have been switched on. I transform.
Thank you. That's really, really nice. It's a highlight, I think, of this memoir, that you develop a lot of different ways to write about what it feels like in the moment, in your mind, in your body, when you are sort of in the throes of this illness. Can you talk about how you found help to deal with the disorder?
Absolutely. I think I had had enough for a long time. It's pretty miserable living with an eating disorder. I think this scene kind of captures that double life, whereas you go about the world sort of at least trying very hard to seem like a normal person, but inside your brain is just full of obsession, and it's really painful, and it's a really tough way to live. And a part of me kind of thought that I was just stuck with this, and I was going to have this thing forever, and this was just who I was. But there was another part of me that had some hope, and I had tried a bunch of diets and meditation and writing in my journal and kind of anything, I would try it. So I was looking for a solution, and someone had mentioned the program Overeaters Anonymous to me, and I thought it sounded ridiculous and had a terrible name. But then I kind of heard of it again right after this scene that I read from, with this terrible, which kind of just continues to be a really destructive binge where I go home and I just keep eating until I feel sick. And I opened my journal that night, and a lot of times after a binge, I opened my journal and it would be, I had a really bad day at work. I had a fight with my boyfriend. But this time I kind of came up blank. I felt like I was in a pretty good place in my life, and that scared me because I really felt like this thing was bigger than me. And when I did head to an OA meeting a few days later, I finally sort of heard my story and my truth come out of the mouths of other people, and I knew that I was at home. And I knew that they were kind of speaking of a solution that wasn't just about eating a different way, but was about living a different way and thinking a different way, and that really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm. And how long did it take you, and maybe what was the process where you learned to write about it?
I've always loved food, and I've always loved to write. And, I've gotten the opportunity to read and talk about the book some. And in my reading in Baltimore, my first grade teacher came, which was so cool. I haven't seen her since, maybe the fifth grade. And she was saying, you always love to write stories about your life, and no one else wanted to do the journaling that I wanted, the first graders to do, but you couldn't stop yourself. So it's always been something that I not necessarily even just love to do, more like felt propelled to do. And when I was in middle school, I wrote a zine about my life stories and brought it to Kinko's and stapled it, and would trade other people for their zine my school box. So it's kind of just been always something that I've almost needed to do is write about my life, and it's been the way that I process and the way that I reflect and the way that I create.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things I love about the book is that it's not simply about this one thing. It's not about your eating disorder. It's about your life, and it's about your life in food, in the food industry in New York, which you also write about in a really fresh way. It includes some great tidbits about the food industry in New York itself, and I wondered, what drew you to writing about food in the first place, and sort of how did you develop those food writing chops?
Yes, well, I wanted to write about food because I was thinking about food all the time, and so it seemed natural. And I think that my career in food, because I worked in restaurants for many years, which I wrote about in the book, was kind of propelled by a double-sided force. And on one side, I think it was a manifestation of my eating disorder. It was like I had this obsession, and I kind of wanted to conquer it, or I wanted to understand it better, or something kind of, there's something dark going on. But then there was also something I like to think really wonderful that still inspires me today, which is this joy that food brings to people, that food that all people eat every day, and that food brings people together, that food carries with it lots of tradition, lots of meaning, lots of love, potentially. It's just such a beautiful part of life for me. And so I think that that's what makes it feel like something that I want to explore and understand. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
And you also taught, you chronicle some of your work for during internships when you're doing your undergraduate work, right? That it seemed also sort of helped to hone. Do you feel like that kind of helped to hone your food writing voice a little bit?
Definitely. So I was really lucky to have an internship in the early days of food blogs at Serious Eats. And Ed Levine was the founder, and he was such a great food writing mentor. I remember sitting around with him and a few other writers at Serious Eats, and I was an intern, and we had this tiny office with a big table that was just covered with food. And I think the food of the day that we were talking about was actually chocolate chip cookies. And we were doing sort of a taste test, and we were all kind of in the middle of it. And he walked in and was like, slow down. You can't just start in the middle about the chocolate chip cookie. You have to start from the beginning. Like, what is the chocolate chip cookie trying to be? You know, what is the ideal chocolate chip cookie? And then we can compare it to that. And I think he kind of helped me slow down. And I think the best food writing uses food as a lens to go deeper than just what's on the plate and talk about other parts of the human experience. Yeah. But I do think you have to start, and what food makes food so kind of fun is that it really starts with something super visceral. And, you know, it is just starting with some sugar, flour, chocolate chips, you know, and what is happening and what is that? And I think that's a really fun and juicy place to begin from.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It made me, what you just said made me think of some advice I got from a writer friend, you know, one of those maxims that they put out that says, write what you can't shut up about.
Yeah.
You know? So I wanted to talk about the writing of the book itself. Can you talk to us about how and when you first started to think of this material as a book?
Yeah, so I, before I thought of this as a book, it stemmed from a bunch of columns that I actually wrote for Serious Eats called Served, which were little snippets from my time waiting tables at Casa Lula, the cheese and wine bar where I worked. And then, I always love to write, and I love to write personal stories, so I, you know, gathered all of my courage to write my first story that talked about eating disorders in the restaurant industry. And I think there was only a tiny, tiny snippet of first person in there. I mostly just interviewed other people and talked about it as a phenomenon outside myself. But at a certain point, I started to feel like all of these little pieces were adding up to something bigger than the whole. And I actually am really grateful to the Hunter Memoir MFA program, which did not accept me, but in their application process, they asked their applicants to write a one-page summary of the memoir that they would want to work on during their time in the mm-hmm. program if they got in. And in writing that summary, it clicked for me that I needed to write this book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a gift, I always knew that I wanted to write. I knew I wanted to write a book, but that really just clarified this project for me.
So you're writing a column for Serious Eats that's about eating disorders in the food industry.
It was just about the food industry. It wasn't.
Oh, okay. Okay.
In fact, they were like, and I had suggested bringing up eating disorders, and they were a little wary of it. So. Just about the food industry.
Yeah. Way to reinforce your initial need to keep it secret. You know, how long were you in that space where you were sort of talking to other people about their experience and burying your own experience until you were really ready to write about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, such a fundamental part of the eating disorder itself was shame. I felt so embarrassed to have this thing. I felt like it was superficial. I felt like I knew better. I felt like, I mean, and of course now I realize this is not how it works, but I thought I was like too smart to have an eating disorder. And I think that it was several years in recovery before I felt comfortable coming out with it publicly, and even coming out with it to friends or to family. You know, that was hard too. And I think writing about it has given me a really nice in, because it's still something that's really hard for people to talk about, understandably. And so now I have this way to bring it up, which is really cool, because I feel like I wish while I was going through it that I could have had that outlet share about my experience. But when I had originally pitched the book to a few publishers, told me that they thought that restaurants were interesting topics and eating disorders were interesting topics, but they were separate. And I feel that that was not the case, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like that would feel like it, like getting a rejection like that would feel like it's starting to invalidate your own experience. And how did you push past that?
Well, you know, it helps when you know you're right. You know, I think some publisher would get it eventually, you know, eventually, or someone would get it, because enough people that I knew did get it. And mm-hmm. I myself had that experience in such an acute way that I could trust that much.
What happened the first time you wrote about this, about having this disease? What were people's reactions around you? What did your parents say?
Oh my gosh, I remember sending this first essay to the editor at the time, and just my palms being like covered with sweat on the, you know, as I hit send to the email. And then I was met with so much love, kindness, generosity. And the thing that really blew my mind was how many people have the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it wasn't people who I knew for years and had no idea would say, oh, I, you know, all of high school and college, I was bulimic, and I had no idea. Or people would say, my sister, my daughter, my best, you know, everyone knows somebody. But I wasn't aware of that. And at first it was really comforting, this idea, I think, that we all need, that we're not alone. But then it kind of became depressing. Like, why do so many people have to deal with this? This sucks.
Why do you think so many people have to deal with this? What's your narrative around that?
I think there's a lot of... I think that the air we breathe, that our cultural milieu is just so full of this idea that our worth is based on how we look, especially for women, but everyone, but I think it definitely, especially for women, that it's impossible to be perfect enough. And this idea, I think that we're starting to see this beginning of what I really hope is a bigger sea change in this, but we have so far to go. And I think, you know, and then also our cultural ideas. There's some sort of study where they asked French people to free associate about what they thought of when they thought of chocolate cake, and the answers were like celebration, joy, delicious. And then they asked Americans, and it was guilt, shame.
Yeah.
And I think we're really like deeply messed up about how we think about food and how we think about bodies. So I almost think that especially if you're a woman and you made it to adulthood without having any kind of body image or food issues, you were like a unicorn. And they are out there, but they're, you know, those people do exist.
Yeah.
And hats off to them. But I think most people can relate, and there is sort of a measure of how extreme these things affect you. You know, people are, I'm so lucky that I can say now that I'm recovered and that I live like a mostly healthy, happy life, but not everyone gets there. Mm-hmm. So.
I know that throughout the writing of this book and the publishing of this book, and now the appearances you're doing around it, are they on top of what sounds like a really busy life in the food industry in New York? And you know, it's the top complaint of every writer I know, that we don't have enough time to write. How did you work that out?
Yes. Well, so after My last job in the book is as a copywriter at a specialty grocery store. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started the shift of my career, which was intentional, from managing and working in restaurants to writing about them in various incarnations. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm lucky in so many ways because I'm a freelancer, and this is my love. Like, if I could talk about my book all day, I'd be very happy to. But it doesn't really pay the rent. So I also copyright for a lot of food companies. That's what pays the rent. And then I also write like fun things about food and other topics. My last full-time job was at another fancy grocery store. And I actually got laid off the same day that I went to talk to my boss about having a more flexible schedule to accommodate a book tour.
Wow.
And, you know, it was like karma, and it wasn't to do with me. The company is really struggling. But it was kind of the perfect timing, and I've been able to piece together a bunch of projects and things that are like enough, but it's definitely a struggle and a hustle. And, I do wish that I had, I'm with all those other writers. I do wish that I had more time to write.
About how long did it take you to put the whole book together? Talk a little bit about your publishing journey.
Sure. I looked back trying to kind of put the timeline together. So it was, and I love when writers are transparent about the publishing journey.
Definitely, yeah.
It's shrouded in so much mystery. Right. And since this is my first book, every step along the way, I was kind of like, oh, this is what happens. So it was 3 years from signing with my agent to the book coming out, okay, and 2 years from signing the contract with the publisher to my book coming out.
Okay.
And I think it was about a year in the thick of it writing. And I got really lucky with finding an agent. Her name is Andrea, and she's amazing. And I met her through a friend who worked on a website that I was writing for, and he had written a book about lucid dreaming, and I was quizzing him about every aspect of it, like, how did you do it? Like, knowing that I wanted to do it. And he ended up introducing me to his agent, and I sent her that page that I had written from Hunter.
Great.
And I sent her a bunch of other stuff, and she said, send me more. And I was like, what do I send? And she said, send everything you had. So I sent her all these things, and we had lunch, and she believed in Feast, and she really helped me as a first-time writer craft the proposal that she helped me, or that she pitched to publishers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't sell, I know some memoirists and nonfiction people sell a proposal and some sell a full manuscript, but I only had about 50 pages of sample chapters in my proposal. And she helped me write like a marketing section and comparable titles and all these things that I didn't really know about. And then we got so many rejections, many of which were incredibly kind. You know, they would say, I love this and this and this and this, but we already published a food memoir this year. Or, you know, just like all these things that were like, oh, come on. You know, but you can't. And I would ask Andrea, she's like, oh, can we just like argue back? And she was like, no, it doesn't really work that way. Like, they mean no. You know? And then eventually, after lots of rejections, we got some interest, and Little A, which is Amazon's literary imprint, was interested, and they ended up purchasing the contract. And then it was about a year of like really writing, and then a lot of rounds of edits, a legal read, a proofread, a copy edit. I didn't even know those were different things.
Wow, yeah.
Process forever, but people who know more tell me that that's not actually forever at all. So
so I want to ask you two different things. I want to know a little bit about the mentoring work that you're doing with women who are dealing with this disorder, and I also want to know what your feeling is your next step. And I wonder if it's maybe, it sounds like it might be kind of the same thing.
Ooh. That's an interesting...
I backed into that one, didn't I?
So my mentoring is through... So it was really this 12-step program that is what did the trick with me, and that gave me some freedom around my food and my life. And so that's the apparatus through which I mentor women, and I work with them. And I kind of, I'm not like a professional social worker or psychologist or anything. So it's really just sharing our stories. And I think that's like the first step. And then the second step is finding something outside of yourself and bigger than yourself mm-hmm. that can help you. And like, you know, there's a million details, but it's really been rewarding to watch people who have been there in the, like, and it's really like such a not glamorous disease of starving yourself or binging or purging or whatnot, and then everything in their life just gets better and they just don't, this doesn't plague them anymore. And I thought that was kind of impossible. So to watch that happen all around me is so cool. And then in terms of what's next for me, I really hope I feel like it's such a privilege to get to write this book, and I would be so thrilled and honored to get to write more. Mm-hmm. Right now in my, you know, in my life is amazing. I'm getting married next month. And
congratulations.
Thank you. You know, things are really good. So I feel like that kind of makes for a boring story.
No, that's great. That's the storybook ending that everybody yeah. wants. But I mean, I love that you are, you know, it sounds like a hackneyed phrase, but you're giving back to this community that's helped you so much. And I also kind of want to know, what does... what's your experience now around food? Is anorexia something that you can move past completely, or is it always sort of a part of your life, something that you have to devote energy to managing? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, different people would tell you different things. And in fact, there's sort of a debate about this, like, can you get over it or not? Mm-hmm. And if there's a high rate of relapse. I do think you can, I think both are true. Like, I think today, I feel like I don't live the life of an eating disordered person. Mm-hmm. I feel like I am recovered. However, I feel like that recovery is contingent on a lot of things and me being in a certain place. And that does take work and diligence, and I do things like I give back to other people. I eat within some gentle boundaries. Mm-hmm. I go to OA meetings. I, you know, just like self-care, but mm-hmm. but I think those things are crucial for every human. But I think for me, it's sort of, I kind of think of it as my medicine so that I don't relapse.
Yeah. You also seem like you really enjoy all of the work around supporting your first book. Have you done readings? Do you have plans for that kind of thing in the future?
Yes, I love it. In fact, I was almost surprised. I thought that when I started writing the book, I was in a good place with recovery. So I was surprised how hard it was to kind of dig up all of these painful moments.
I bet.
It was tough. And I started seeing a therapist for the first time in a while and all this stuff. But surprisingly for me, again, because all of this is new, talking about the book and promoting the book and doing readings and that sort of thing has been such a joy. It's been amazing. It hasn't felt painful. It's felt kind of joyful.
That's great.
And I am lucky enough to, I mostly finished with my big book tour. I went to like 10 cities, and my publisher told me that every day an author goes to a bookstore and nobody is there. So I arranged the book tour based on places where I knew at least one person. So at least a cousin or a friend would be there. And I'm still in September. Every weekend that I'm not married, I'm going to be at a different book festival. So I'm still very much engaged in promoting the book, which I feel like is so fun, and getting, and also writing is such a solitary, lonely thing, yeah. and getting to connect with people and be out in the world and talk to people is really rich and rewarding.
Yeah, definitely. I also like to ask people who come on the show what they're reading, what they might recommend, and with all the time you have on your hands when you're not preparing for a wedding and doing 10 more readings in the next couple of weeks.
It's so funny you mentioned that. And I will actually say that I just finished Alexander Chee's newish essay collection, How to Write an Autobiographical Novel,
yeah,
that I thought was so beautiful and interesting and unexpected and inspiring. I loved it. I also read two novellas called Asymmetry by Lisa Halliday that I thought was a gorgeous, creative, wonderful. And I also loved these two kind of really different stories next to each other.
Okay.
Both of those I highly recommend.
Great. Beautiful. Well, I've really enjoyed talking with you. I loved the book, and you will too. It's Feast, True Love, In and Out of the Kitchen by Hannah Howard. You can probably catch her if you're in the New York area. She'll be reading when she's not getting married.
Thank you so much, Kim. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
You got it. Thanks so much.
All right. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. And that was Kim McQueen interviewing Hannah Howard. So this week's Write the Book prompt is to write about someone who tries to pass off a dish as something that he or she actually cooked when that is not the case. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and please listen next week for another prompt or suggestion. Okay, so I have a couple of announcements. First of all, today is National Radio Day. National Radio Day 2018. It's Monday, August 20th. Radio is one of our most, our long-standing electronic media. It delivers information, news, entertainment, and company to millions of Americans every hour of every day. According to the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, there's no one authoritative source on the history of National Radio Day, but it has been celebrated since the early 90s on this date, August 20th, possibly because 8MK, which is now WWJ in Detroit, first broadcast on August 20th, 1920. So in honor of National Radio Day and in honor of radio and in celebration of WBTV LP having some new shows coming into their lineup, I will tell you about one new show that's coming up, premiering on Saturday from 12 to 2 p.m. There's a new show, Disney Bound Radio. Burlington, Vermont's only Disney Through the Decades radio program will become live on Saturday with your host, Cindy. The show starts in 1923 with silent film scores, a special guest, and a mouse and his mini. All the details, special features, and schedules are on Facebook at Disney Bound Radio. Okay, if you're interested in sharing Write the Book with friends and out-of-town family, people that can't listen on the radio, do let them know that they can stream it live at 99.3wbtv.org. They can also listen to archived episodes that are available on iTunes, on other podcasting sites actually as well, and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, which is shelaughswithoutus.com. She Laughs Without Us. Every once in a while, I try to explain this, or I like to explain this, so it just doesn't sound unfriendly. She Laughs Without Us is a mnemonic for how to spell my first name. If I had a website with my first name, no one would ever find it. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. And if you like the show, please rate it in iTunes, like it on Facebook, and do tell all of your friends. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Have a great week.